could I get my show up and I'll talk a little bit about the general themes of density and triangular towers and some thoughts that I maybe would carry over to the other days of the symposium. I thought the previous conversation between the head of the MTA and the MTR was exactly the sort of, and the Port Authority was exactly the sort of high-level thinking that we wanted to sponsor through the symposium. So it was terrific that we started off so successfully. And one of the things that that I thought that I'd share with you is when we started working in Hong Kong and in Asia, we were viewed as the experts coming from the United States, the expert in the high-rise. And over the last 20 years, the knowledge and the expertise in high-rise has really moved, as David has shown, to Asia. But it's great to see then that it's coming back here. So this idea of knowledge going around the world as we move forward and in this never-ending process of building cities, because what we're doing is not building railway lines and we're not building towers, but we're actually building cities and places for people to be at, be in. And that's really what I wanted to talk to you about. Not about the tracks and not about the towers, but really what's between that, which is really what architects care about. Now, I'm going to, Julia, what did you do? You ready? Up to Julia, up to the work. Oh, it got it. It worked. Okay. So on this slide, now what it is a bit like what Graph or what David was showing me, this is all the world or the cities of KPF. And on the left, you see Asia. In the center, you see the United States. And the right, you see Europe. And what I wanted to convey to you in this was a sense of the great scale changes there are between the tall buildings in Asia and the tall buildings in Europe, for example. They are completely different animals. They're very different, but the people that are living there are the same people with the same expectations, same aspirations. And what we're trying to do is build habitable cities in both. And you saw on the far left the tallest building in London, which is now underway, is about 300 meters. The buildings we're building in the 21st century in Asia are almost 500 meters, and the things that are going on in Dubai are over 1,000 meters. This is the city of London, and in the city of London, of course, we're building in a 15th or 14th century city on Roman, basically on a Roman foundation. So we're building simultaneously at all the heights, and we have to care about all the scales, which is different than when you're building on reclaimed land in Hong Kong. And in fact, the rail, and you can see in this graph, which I think is very interesting for our building in London, the two red zones are the two towers we now have under construction in London. The one in the lower one will be the tallest building in the city of London. And you can see this is built in basically a medieval fabric, and that the stations are, you can see the stations poking in. I don't know, does this have a pointer? You can see here that the stations had to come in and insert themselves into a medieval city, which is very different than in New York, for example, where the development of Grand Central was made quite possible with the grid, and then the development around Grand Central could be simultaneously with the rail lines, so and could be reinforced over a long period of time within the grid structure. So that in New York and in the United States, we have the advantage of working within a grid, and also that the authorities built the rail with the development simultaneously. This is different, I think, than what happens in the UK, and is also different what happens in Hong Kong, where the rail is built well ahead of the commercial development. Of course, in New York, that had the danger of also not always following through. And in the case of Grand Central, building overbuilding and not building on the, or not planning ahead for the rail on top of the station sufficiently. And in fact, in Penn Station, one of the reasons Penn Station was lost was because Stanford White refused to build commercial development above the station. And so all what we're left with is a Pennsylvania Hotel across the street from what used to be Penn Station, and the disaster of the current Penn Station, that vision is, we trust vision will find a way to get rid of in our lifetime. Now, The place where I think they really have the answer to nearly everything is in Japan. And if I say one of the, I often say that I think one of the ways to solve a lot of, make a lot of progress in solving the world's sustainability problems is convincing everybody to behave and live like the Japanese do today. Because the Japanese, the modern Japanese people, use for sure less than a half the energy per capita than the rest of us do. And they live in a quality of life and safety and health and longevity greater than we do in our society. And we were very fortunate on our first project in Japan. Jim Cohen and I worked on the Nagoya Station building, and we were commissioned by the Japan Railways, that at that time would belong to the Japanese government. And I think we were the first architect, American architect, ever to be hired by the Japan Railway Company. And that was an experience in itself, which will take a few days to tell you about. And we also were the, after World War II, there was not a single building left standing in Nagoya. This is where we built this megastructure, except the station, which was built by the Germans. And so Gene and I had the honor of building over the last building that survived World War II. And so, but this building encapsulates the ideal of rail and mixed-use development in one building. And you can see here that this is a world unto itself. This, by the way, is the bullet train line between Tokyo and Osaka, Nagoya being midway, and Nagoya being the hometown of Toyota cars as well as the bullet train. And you then have a office building and 800-room convention hotel all sitting above a 15-level plus mixed-use primary retail and entertainment above a railway station serving something like 500,000 people a day. And this is all integrated. And in fact, way you get up to the towers is through a sky street, a public sky street that we created that is reached by shuttle elevators that take you, double-deck shuttle elevators that take you from the station at the base of the building. So that the way you get to the headquarters of Japan Railways is through a vertical railway line. So that there's a symbolic relationship between the way you get into the building and move through the building and the way you physically, geographically get to this building. This building was a great success in the fact that right through the 90s, when the Japan real estate market was in decline, year on year, every year, the real estate around this building rose in value. And in fact, Toyota moved the headquarters to across the street from this building. This building also taught us the ability in high-rise mixed-use buildings to start introducing public spaces into upper levels and the success of public spaces removed from the ground. And since then, in most of our high-rise buildings, in Asia, we've tried to introduce an element of public facilities and civic facilities somewhere in the tower then give back to the city a place to look back on the city. And in all cases, these have been successful. The most recent one in Shanghai. Now, probably one of the most seminal mixed-use centers we've worked on that generated a lot of further development in Asia was the Roppongi Hills, a city within a city in the center of Tokyo. And you can see that most of Tokyo is a low-rise city with spots of zones of tall buildings, clusters of tall buildings that demarcate public transportation stations. And an important element in high-rise design, a successful high-rise design, is the integration and blending in of low-rise structures. There are very few examples of districts that are exclusively high-rise that are successful urban places. It's essential to introduce a fair degree of variety of building scales. And this building, the scale of this building is a 60-story building, but each one of these floors is over 60,000 square feet, so that it is quite an enormous dimension in itself. That is, and then the office structure here is linked to a number of residential buildings and retail in the base. This was one of the first cases of an extensive urban redevelopment with Class A office space adjacent not only to a hotel in this case, but also to residential development. So the concept of work and play and living was all integrated, which was then breaking down, sort of helped break down the classical modern concept of zoning into districts, which we now see that we've done in Union Square, in particular the idea that residential development should happen in close proximity to Class A office space. The entrance for most mixed-use projects in Asia is from the subway system or from the mass transit, and a great deal of care now is taken in most of these developments to make that entrance as exciting and invigorating as possible, in this case in Roppongi Hills, and this mass transit of escalators itself going up through an electronic room, media room. And as you get up into up to the top, then you walk across a garden, a public space free of motor cars, infused with art, large pieces of public art, so that it can attract not only an office user, but it also it becomes an attractor for cultural use. And that was very important in this project. I'm going to end in Japan. I'm never going to get to Hong Kong, Carol. Don't worry. The other public space is a large covered flexible public space that is used for a number of things, in this case Tai Chi in Japan. So I started studying Thomas Tai Chi in Japan. So it's just for you. and then at the top of the building there is a 250,000 square foot museum and academic facility, but also a public gallery that you can look down over the city of Tokyo, and that's open to the public, and look down on many of the roofs that are now planted. This is now a requirement in Japan to plant the roofs. So this entire mixed-use center becomes a cool spot in a rather dense city. And in fact, if you look at infrared photographs of Roppongi Hills, you will notice, which I've got this back in the office, that these mixed-use centers can actually work against the heat sink effect that's common in many dense cities. I think I'm going to end there because I know Carol is, I'll end in Hong Kong, and this beautiful picture, which I think maybe will be the backdrop for the common discussion. Thank you very much.